Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we welcome back Alan Fitzpatrick, who is the CEO and co-founder of Open Broadband, also the co-founder of Charlotte Hearts Gigabyte and NC Hearts Gigabytes. As we went through last week, he's certainly a longtime supporter and member of the Charlotte startup community, and excited to have him back today. Our conversation this week obviously picks up where we left off last week, right? But one of the first things that I just wanted to jump into him, and we started to hint towards this a little bit last week, was how do you handle the highs and lows of being an entrepreneur? What gets Alan excited about 2018? Why doesn't Alan quit the startup world and head back to just the corporate world, right? Where, you know, theoretically it's a safer, less risky type of environment. We talk a little bit about employee compensation and stock options, the benefits, at least to Alan, of what are the benefits of having a co-founder. And we wrap up with a conversation that I've touched base with a couple people on here recently. I just wanted Alan's take on Amazon HQ2, and he had a really interesting take in comparison of it to Google Fiber and which one he thought was actually more beneficial for the city, to an answer that might surprise many of us. So anyways, a good, solid interview with Alan, huge fan of his. I think the company's poised to do well. Again, in our conversation today, you really pick up on Alan's maturity in running a startup company. And I think you know, if you didn't come out of last week's interview pulling for Alan, I think you'll certainly come out of this week's interview pulling for Alan over the course of the next 2 to 5 years. So hope you enjoyed today's show. So Alan, thanks for sticking around for kind of part two. So first part, we covered a lot of different ground, and we wrapped up that on a note of perseverance and kind of talking about how you found the three investors in Winston-Salem. You know, just going to an event that, I mean, to be honest, you probably weren't all that excited about making the drive up to Winston-Salem. And you mentioned it in the early part of our first interview where you talked about the roller coaster of an entrepreneur, right? So one day an investor turns you down, and then the next day you get a call from, you know, maybe Wayne County saying, you know, come in and talk to us about Open Broadband. And then the next day a sale to a different county goes through, and then the next day an investor comes on board. So it's that constant up and down, right? The highs and lows of an entrepreneur.
It really
is. Get through it.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, William. One thing I've learned is just try to stay even keel, not to get too high on the high moments and not to get too low on the low moments, but just to accept that that's the natural state of things. Yeah, there are going to be weeks when you lose your deals. You lose that investor, and it's like, I was actually talking to an investor that I really had high hopes for, gosh, probably 60 days ago. And I really thought that was going to work out, and they gave me all the right indications, and then it didn't go through. And he said he just couldn't do it. So, yeah, I feel bad at the time. But then, like you say, you know, a couple of weeks later, we get, you know, three new investors from Winston-Salem. We end up closing out our investment round, and all's good.
Yeah.
So you learn to kind of, you know, not get too down when you lose out on things. But then you'll have other weeks when everything goes your way. That was actually the case for us last week. We won three deals in the same week, and we got investment checks. It's like, it doesn't get much better than that, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, Alan, don't get too excited. This was a good week.
Yeah.
But another week will come along, it's not going to be this good. So just kind of take the ups and downs and just try to be even keel.
But it's like golf, right? I mean, I'll tell you, the game of golf is really simple. You put the ball, you put the little white ball in the little hole, and that's how you play golf. And so to be a startup founder, don't get too high and don't get too low. But just like the game of golf isn't that simple, the game of startup founding isn't that simple either, right?
You're right. That's an excellent analogy. I'm going to use that one, if you don't mind me borrowing that. But yeah, if Jordan Spieth hits a bad shot in golf, you know, he just throws it off and goes and hits a good shot the next time. And if it's a great shot, it doesn't mean every shot's going to be great. But good analogy.
Absolutely. So what has you most optimistic about open broadband as you look into 2018?
The market opportunity is just ripe. That's probably the one of the best things. And any investor who looks at a startup business is going to say, well, what's the total addressable market, right? And who are the competitors and what are your odds of success? Well, the more I've been in this business, it's like the market is huge. You asked the question in the first segment, if the problem we're addressing is nationwide, and it absolutely is. I mean, there's no reason why we have to be limited to North Carolina or South Carolina or Virginia. You know, this opportunity is huge. So that's probably been one of the best reinforcements of our original business thesis. So we thought this would be a big market. We thought it would be well received, and that's exactly what we're experiencing.
So you drop into a new county, how many subscribers do you need to make that a profitable venture, Alan, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, we tend to think in terms of revenue, I guess even more so, but we're looking for, so $3,000 to $5,000 a month of revenue to kind of get started in the market.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we build out according to demand.
Okay.
So it doesn't take a huge amount to justify getting started.
Okay.
But we've been pretty conservative. We haven't done a build it and they will come. So until we get a couple of lead clients in an area, we're not just building, you know, in the hopes that people are going to sign up. So we do look for those lead customers first. And as soon as we have them, then we start the build process. And we realize, you know, the revenue quote that I just quoted you is really just a getting started.
Yeah.
That's just to kind of cover our equipment costs and leasing fiber out to the area and getting going. But at least it guarantees us something, that we're not just going in cold. It's interesting. A lot of times people think of entrepreneurs as being big risk takers. And in a way we are, right? It's a lot less risky just to go into a corporate job and get paid every day. But at the same time, the best entrepreneurs I've met, putting open broadband aside, are ones that are pretty conservative. It's like, you're not going to take a risk. You want to have some guaranteed revenue coming in before you're going to spend the money.
Yeah.
That was one thing I learned from my previous boss and the owner at DC74, is he did an outstanding job of that. Just making sure that all the decisions were financially prudent, making sure that, you know, there's revenue that was sort of guaranteed before money was spent. And it's just it sounds conservative, but I think some of the best entrepreneurs operate that way.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. So it certainly makes sense to have something on the books to drag you out there, right?
It does, right.
So what again, you've started a couple of different businesses. You were with DC74, I think, from the beginning, and you mentioned it's definitely riskier, and I'll agree with you on one hand and disagree with you on the other hand, that it's riskier to be an entrepreneur than it is to go work for a big company. But what's drawn you to, you know, startups, Alan? Why not go work for Microsoft or somebody else? Why keep down this path?
I enjoy creating things. And I actually started off in the corporate world earlier in my career. But in those corporate jobs, I was in positions where I was creating new functions and new groups within a larger company. So I had a taste of sort of the creation aspect, even though I had a comfort blanket over with me with the corporation. But I'd always wanted to kind of do my own thing. So I became an entrepreneur later in life, even though I was interested in it years ago. But it comes back to, for me, I really enjoy the creation aspect. If I ever were to work for a corporation again, it would have to be in some role where I was creating something, a new product, a new market, something new. I wouldn't want to just go into some existing role and take over and continue the status quo. And maybe that's just my personality, that I like the creation aspect of things. But there's no reason why anyone can't become an entrepreneur at any age, like you were saying earlier with the event at QC FinTech, that entrepreneurism isn't just for, you know, kids coming out of school, but it's for anyone at any stage of life. And one thing I've noticed is the odds of success to have a successful company seem to go up with age. And I think that's because people have experience in the industry, yeah, and they have contacts and they have money, which are all things that, you know, someone coming out of school doesn't have. So, you know, maybe the biggest startups like Facebook and Twitter and Google are all started by the, you know, by the millennials. The greatest number of successful companies, maybe smaller, but successful, are done by older entrepreneurs. And there's a lot of research out there that actually proves that.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. So, what, and we talked about it in the last segment, you know, raising money is always a difficult thing. But other than raising money, and I know that's a big caveat there, what's been the most challenging aspect of 2017 as you've gotten from an open broadband perspective?
Finding the right resources at the level that you can afford to pay them. So when you're in the corporate world and you need a director of engineering or director of IT or whatever position, director of marketing, you pay a six-figure salary to get people like that. Well, when you're a startup company, you can't afford to do that. But yet you need the skills and the talents those types of people have. You just can't afford to pay them that kind of salary. So one of our challenges has been, how do we get the right talent into the company in a structure that is affordable to where we are as a business? And so far we've been very successful with that. We have six people involved with the company right now, but it's been, you know, a little creative as to how we structure the role and how many hours they have and, you know, contractor versus employee and just getting it so we have the right talent in place in a, you know, model that is cost effective for us.
Okay. Are you doing any type of stock compensation for those six employees, Alan, or no?
We haven't yet. That's something that's in the back of our mind. So we know that when we go to a VC round, and as we were talking about in the first segment, you know, that might happen at the end of 2018, we would expect a venture capital firm to say you need to have an employee stock option pool.
Yeah.
At that point, we would do that. One of the things you have to decide as a startup is how much money you're going to spend on legal activities, right? Versus putting that money in your business and your customers. And it's like, yeah, I could pay for a stock option plan and, you know, pay for that and get all that set up. But is that the best use for our cash, or should we, you know, use that money for something else? So far we've been able to get the talent we need, with the compensation that we can pay. And in the back of my mind, I'm knowing that we're going to do some kind of a stock option pool, you know, at the next raise.
Yeah. Now, I remember when I had my startup back in 2013, I had a friend of mine that was an attorney reach out to me and point out all the things that I needed to have done from a legal perspective in order to have the company, you know, appropriate. And I asked him how much he thought it would cost. And he said it was something like $35,000 or $40,000. And I fell on the floor, partially in shock and partially laughing. So needless to say, we did not pursue all of those legal options.
You're right. You have to decide, you know, what you're going to invest in early on. And sometimes things that you know you want to do long term, you just don't want to do up front. And, you know, for any entrepreneur and yourself included, I'm sure you went through this as well. It is so easy to spend money.
Yeah,
I could just give somebody your credit card number or a red check. It's easy to spend money.
Yeah,
it is hard to make money. Right, think about your first few customers and what you had to do to try to get them on board, and then you have to bill them and you have to collect the money. You know, getting your initial customers up and running and producing revenue for you is really, really hard. So my advice to any entrepreneur is be very, very careful about your payments going out, because that is so easy to do. Yeah. Get that money coming in. That's the hard part. So until you have good money coming in, you know, try to hold off on expenses as long as as long as you can, you know, what's prudent for your own business.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is you, next thing you know, you can see a lot of money heading out the door and very little coming in the door as a startup. So that's a key component of success, I think, in one of the areas I failed in.
Well, that's an area every entrepreneur needs to focus on. So this is my, you know, third time as a startup, and you know, I've learned something every time, and I think we're doing it well so far. Someday I'll look back at this and say, oh, I should have done this better or that better. And so it's always a continuous learning process, but it has helped that this is my third startup.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I would suggest to any other startup founder out there is if it's your first idea, you know, obviously do your best at it, but if it fails, it's not the end of the world. You can always do something again and get better at it each time.
And also surround yourself with others, right? So surround yourself with the co-founder, advisors that have seen it, been around it, experienced, et cetera, right? I mean, you've got a co-founder and the experience as well and the folks to kind of talk to as you get through this too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the great benefits of having a co-founder is they help keep you level. Now, we talked in the earlier segment about, you know, not getting too high on the great times and not getting too low when you don't win deals. A co-founder is great at keeping you level and trying to say, okay, it's great that we won this, but don't get too excited. You know,
yeah.
Let's just keep going. So having a co-founder really helps you from an emotional perspective because there aren't that many people you can really confide with as a CEO of a startup company. You really can't necessarily confide completely with all your employees. You know, what if you're worried about something for the company, like you're worried about it getting a paycheck in from a client? You're not going to tell your employees that, right?
No.
You can't necessarily tell your spouse, or they might freak out and tell you to go get a corporate job.
Yeah.
So, like, who do you talk to? So it's great in Charlotte. There are plenty of other startup CEOs that you can go talk to. You've interviewed quite a few of them on your podcast. But also having a co-founder is another person you can talk to, you know, honestly and openly about stuff and not have to worry about, you know, the reaction.
So, Alan, talk a little bit. At what point, so we talked about or we mentioned the fact that this could be a national operation, right? Talk a little bit about when do you start thinking about how to scale it or how to sell and exit it?
We're already thinking of that now. So that's a great question.
So month nine.
Every startup founder, this is going to sound odd to somebody who's starting a company for the very first time, but every startup founder needs to be thinking about the exit in the first year. I mean, not that you are going to exit in the first year, but you need to understand what is the exit plan and when is that going to happen and what do you need to do to exit successfully. So if you're going to raise money from investors, you're going to have to tell them how they're going to get their money back.
Yeah.
And it's probably not going to be dividends. It's probably going to be sell the company, right? And that's when they make the windfall. So the next question would be, okay, well, who are you going to sell your company to? Who would buy you and why and what kind of multiple would they give you for it? And then explain that and give me some data that shows why they would give you that multiple. So as soon as you start getting investors in, which we do, I mean, those conversations naturally come up. So back to your question on expansion and scaling, that factored in directly to, well, how are we going to sell the company? And maybe 5 years out, right? It's not like we're going to sell the company this year. So maybe 5 or 6 years out, who is going to buy us and why would they buy us? We felt that if we were just scatter gunning across the country, you know, turn up service in Colorado and New York and Pennsylvania and Florida and North Carolina, we had a hard time seeing where anybody was going to buy us because of those markets. But if we had a dense concentration in a geographic area, like let's say we cover, you know, 20% of North Carolina and 10% of South Carolina and 15% of Virginia, and it's reasonably contiguous,
mm-hmm.
that someone interested in the Southeast market for an internet service provider, now there's some attraction. We have enough density in a particular geographic area that would be attractive to buy. And that would be much better for us than just having completely different, you know, disparate islands across the country.
Yeah.
So as we scale, you know, we're starting off in North Carolina, but we are thinking South Carolina and Virginia next, just to sort of maintain some geographic density.
Mm-hmm. So that's a really, really good point. So, you know, Stephen Covey said it best when he said, begin with the end in mind, right?
That's an excellent analogy. Yep. It really threw me my very first startup. That threw me when somebody asked me how we were going to exit. And I almost got a little defensive. I'm like, we're trying to build this company. What do you mean exit?
Yeah.
But that's just one of the things I learned over the years. It's a very natural question, particularly from an investor. They want to know how they're going to get their money back. You should be thinking about what the exit is going to look like.
So let's pivot back just a little bit to talk about kind of Charlotte for a second. So we hinted at it early on in this conversation as we got started with the first part as far as the seeing each other yesterday at Demo Day. But, you know, Dan Roselli and his team at QC FinTech hosted the first Southeast FinTech Venture Conference here in town yesterday, and I thought the attendance was great. We had founders, we had investors, we had community members. And it was a really, really good day. Really, really good turnout. What's it been like seeing the startup scene develop around you over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, Alan?
It's been exciting and very good to see. And your time frame is spot on. If you look back at like 2010, the only real startup activity that I saw at the time was the Ben Craig Center at UNC Charlotte. There were no co-working facilities at all at the time. There really weren't any groups or events of any significance. It was UNC Charlotte was kind of it. I don't mean any disparaging remarks to CPCC or any of the other places. I'm sure there were some activities going on.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't real visible. Dan Roselli started Packard Place in early 2011.
That was right.
And that was like, wow, we're now going to have this startup center right in Uptown. And to me, that was a huge deal. And then the next thing you know, startup centers, co-working centers start sprouting up all over. So now here we are in 2017, and there's probably a dozen, 13 co-working spaces across Charlotte.
Yeah.
And they started to specialize in different areas. So if you're, you know, a creative, C3 Labs is pretty appealing in South Boulevard. If you're a web developer or marketing person, then Huga is a pretty good environment for that. And Advent Coworking has done great. Industry Charlotte out at the Music Factory has done great. So seeing all these startup centers sprout, and the fact that we haven't oversaturated the market, shows that there are so many budding entrepreneurs that just want to be part of the scene. And obviously here recently we got WeWork and Industrious, who are the national players coming to Charlotte, which further puts a stamp of approval on Charlotte. And then, you know, you have CRFE, which Walt Fry is leading, and Start Charlotte with Juan Garzon, and the podcast that you're doing. There's just so many positive things happening in Charlotte that are promoting the startup scene. Walt Fry asked me last night, you know, Alan, what else should we be doing? And my answer was, let's market our successes more. We have some phenomenal successes in Charlotte, right? AvidXchange, you know, is getting a lot of visibility, you know, Charlotte-based, you know, 17-year overnight success story, right? 18 years or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, they're a homegrown Charlotte company, and Red Ventures, you know, the same way, and those are sort of touted as our unicorns for Charlotte. But, you know, let's not forget LendingTree.
Yeah.
That was a Charlotte startup, and they're doing phenomenally well this year.
Mm-hmm.
You also have, you know, Peak 10 Data Centers. David Jones started that, gosh, back in 2000, and now they merged with BioWest, and they're a couple billion-dollar company.
Yeah,
that started in Charlotte. So, and there's a whole bunch of smaller companies, right? From DealCloud to Map Anything to Stratified and Traceda. I think the more we can market and promote our successes, the more that's going to attract more entrepreneurs and attract capital.
Yeah.
If you don't have the success stories, or if the success stories are kind of buried, then you're not going to get the full benefit. That's one thing that I wish had not happened with Yap. Are you familiar with the Yap story in Amazon?
I am not.
Okay, there was a startup company that did voice recognition technology called Yap. And they were acquired by Amazon, as it turned out, but they couldn't tell anybody. They were sworn to secrecy. And you know, nobody knows what they sold for. And I believe the technology that Yap developed is now part of the, device? Echo?
Okay.
Alexa,
right? Alexa and Echo, same thing, kind of, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I think that the core of that technology actually came from Yap. Well, it would be really cool to tout that as, hey, you know, Charlotte developed this. A Charlotte company did. But I think Amazon had just some really strict rules where they couldn't promote it. But what a great success story that a few of us that kind of like, you know, dug in under the covers and found out what was really happening know about it.
Yeah.
But the more that Charlotte can promote our successes, I think the better for the whole ecosystem.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'll tell you, and I think I say this hesitantly, but because I think the Charlotte Business Journal has done a very nice job covering what's going on in the startup scene over the course of the last couple of years. But I woke up this morning, you know, thinking about last night or yesterday and how successful I thought the Southeast FinTech Venture Conference was and how neat it was for the city and, you know, the different sources of capital that were there and everything else. And I woke up and I was like, oh man. So I went to read the newspaper and I didn't see anything at all about it. And so I was like, well, maybe there's a front page article on the CBJ about it. And there was the success that AvidXchange had, you know, was in that, had finalized the purchase of a company up in Massachusetts yesterday. But once again, I didn't see anything, you know, this morning covering the success of the Southeast FinTech Venture Conference or Demo Day. And I know the CBJ will release an article or two over the course of the next couple of days. I was really hoping it'd come the day after, right, to tout and promote that success, because I do think as much as you and I see it, you know, outside of that circle or maybe that inner circle, it's the successes aren't seen as much.
You're absolutely right. And I feel the same way you do. I wish that it had been on the front page of the paper. I read the Charlotte Agenda as well, which is an online publication, and I like them a lot. I'm a member of the Charlotte Agenda. I think they are a terrific example of a new media company and how they can be successful. And they're a Charlotte success story. But I didn't see anything in their post today about the Southeast Venture Conference. I'm sorry, the FinTech Conference either. It would be nice if we could just get more publicity and exposure for what all is taking place.
Yeah. So, Alan, I'll leave it with one final question, and it's a tricky one. And I've enjoyed, I think open broadband is a really neat concept. And I think, you know, the traction that y'all are starting to get, I'll be interested to see how that develops and when y'all start to raise money in 2018. Because, you know, I think it has the potential to be another Charlotte success story.
Thank you. That's exactly our expectation and what we're trying to do. Yeah.
There's been a lot of conversation recently about Amazon's HQ2. And I got into a debate last night with a couple folks about whether or not we're better off as a city not having HQ2 come in here and rather have the city. And Tom Rue and I from NCID got into this debate last week as well about whether or not we'd be better off putting together incentive packages to home grow our own startups rather than disrupting and bringing in Amazon over the course of the next 3 years. And I'm not going to ask you to take an opinion on should we have recruited Amazon as hard as we have, but do you think Amazon's necessary at this point in time for us?
I would not use the word necessary.
Yeah.
However, if they came here, I think that'd be great. I wish PayPal had come here as well. And if we hadn't had the political issues at the time, they had already said they would. The reason why I say it would be good if they came is it just puts another stamp of approval on Charlotte as a market. And I feel that way about WeWork as well. I mean, do we really need WeWork as a co-working center in Charlotte? I don't really think so. I mean, we have a dozen others, and between Packer Place and Advent and Huga and all the others, we have plenty of capacity, but the WeWork kind of puts a stamp of approval on Charlotte. And I would view Amazon in the same way. Although Amazon, I don't know, has the ripple effect in the economy that attracting Google Fiber, you know, would have. Yeah. You know, having the Google Fiber here kind of puts an infrastructure in place that allows a lot of other things to be built on top of it. Whereas having Amazon here, I'm not sure what else gets built on top of it. It's good, but I would say maybe the Google Fiber picking Charlotte might be even more important than Amazon picking Charlotte.
Oh, what a great point. So I've enjoyed it, Alan. So, thanks for carving out an hour of your time. On the back end of, you know, spending, you know, a good portion of your yesterday afternoon at the demo day. So, as I said earlier, I like open broadband. I love what you've done for the startup scene in Charlotte. You've been an integral part in getting it up off the ground over the course of the last 5 or 6 years. Gosh, I feel like, you know, you are one of the people that's always at the startup events. So thanks for being such a, you know, a key component of it, getting it off the ground, and now to see you with your own startup again back in it, it's exciting to see, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck over the course of the next 6, 12, and 60 months.
Thanks, William. I really appreciate it. Thank you for letting me be on your show.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Have a good Thanksgiving.
You too. Bye-bye.
Again, another great interview, I think, with Alan. Good perspective there at the end as far as the benefits that the city's reaping from Google Fiber. I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't think HQ2 would be a horrible thing for Charlotte. I just think maybe there's that it wouldn't be a bad thing if we didn't win it either. So, but again, Alan and Open Broadband are serving in a similar capacity to a lot of these rural communities that, you know, Google Fiber has done to us, which is bring in that high speed internet, give it to the businesses and give it to the consumers as well, because we are all consuming more and more online material, and having access to it is great for both. I think they're filling that niche. They've got a clear vision for how they're going to execute. Obviously, they'll have to pivot from time to time, as any startup does. They've got a clear vision of how they want to execute. They've got a clear vision on an exit strategy. And I think they're going to have success. I think they're going to find it. And I think they're, you know, will hit some of the targets that they want to hit. So it'd be an interesting startup to continue to watch in 2018, and certainly towards the end of 2018, as they likely start another fundraising campaign. So anyways, I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Charlotte Angel Connection.
William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates also does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments herein described may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interest may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, 51A under the Company Act, or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interest. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.